Dog Works Radio is sponsored by Alaska Dog Works. Check out their website at alaskadogworks.com. Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
I'm Alex Stein, and this is Iditarod Through the Decades. This week, the late 2000s. The 2006 Iditarod included 83 teams, with former champions Martin Boozer, Jeff King, Mitch Seavey, Doug Swingley, and Rick Swenson among the competition. The field also included 23 mushers from the lower 48, including Rachel Sedaris, a musher who is legally blind, who was competing with Tim Osmar and his team acting as her visual interpreters. Gary Paulson, author of Back of the Pack and a number of other books about mushing, was also competing, but he scratched early on in Squetna. Swingley dominated the early part of the race before being overtaken by Paul Gebhardt, who won the First to the Yukon award. But Jeff King took the lead in Galena and could not be caught, despite valiant efforts by Swingley, Gebhardt, Didi Genro, Bjørnar Andersen from Team Norway, Ali Zirkel, and John Baker. On his way out of White Mountain, King knew that he would win his fourth victory unless something catastrophic occurred. He spent the rest of his race strategizing on how to build on this victory, thinking that he could then go on to tie the record for wins the next year by capturing his fifth Iditarod. In the summer of 2006, Susan Butcher, the four-time champion who dominated the sport in the 1980s and captured the popular imagination of fans in Alaska and all around the world, died of leukemia at age 51. Butcher had retired from Iditarod when she was still on top, stepping back to raise her family. Her husband and kennel partner, David Monson, told the New York Times that Susan, quote, never thought that there should be any barriers for women. She was the first woman ever to dominate a sport where men and women compete equally, and the men don't always like that. Chaz St. George of Iditarod praised Butcher as a tough competitor, but also someone who had a unique ability to connect with people, and that helped this race and this sport rise to a level it had never been at before. Butcher was one of the first mushers to emphasize dog care and training of dogs on a year-round basis, which soon became the standard for all competitive and most recreational mushers. She found in December 2005 that she had leukemia, which was treated with chemotherapy. She elected to get a stem cell transplant in May 2006, hoping that this experimental approach to her cancer would give her the best chance of survival. Monson said that Butcher knew her two daughters would grow up to be powerful, confident young women, and added that she lived more in 51 years than most people would do in 100. Years after her last Iditarod, fans still speak about Susan Butcher's heroic accomplishments, and long after her death, people describe Butcher dogs in the same tones that fans from decades earlier reserved for dogs raised by the great Leonard Seppala. Starting in 2007, a new champion emerged to take the Iditarod by storm, Lance Mackey and his aptly named Comeback Kennel. Mackey, the son of champion Dick Mackey and brother of champion Rick Mackey, had been around sled dogs and dog sled racing for most of his life. Mackey's mushing career was going well until he was diagnosed with throat cancer in 2001. While fighting the disease, he entered the 2002 Iditarod but was forced to scratch. He took a year off to fight his cancer and wound up getting rid of many of his dogs. As a result of an operation to remove tumors, Mackey suffered from nerve damage that led to so much pain in his left index finger that he chose to have that finger removed surgically. Radiation treatments also destroyed Mackey's salivary glands, which leads to him carrying around a bottle of water everywhere that he goes. But without the salivary glands, many of his teeth started disintegrating, and he began to lose teeth over the years. In addition to all of these problems, Mackey had a history of minor scrapes with the law. In short, he was the last person most people looked at as a potential Iditarod champion and hero to mushers and armchair mushers all around the world. But Mackey was a formidable competitor and someone who had a legendary ability to communicate with his dogs. He would often sleep in his dog yard instead of sleeping inside so he could be closer to his dogs, so he could be around them, so he could learn to think like a dog, and so that they would trust him as they trusted their most beloved fellow dogs. In 2005, Mackey entered the Yukon Quest as a rookie and won the race. The Quest, sometimes referred to by Iditarod fans as that other 1,000-mile dog sled race, is less popular but often considered a more difficult race technically. The Quest has fewer checkpoints, more elevation changes, and often much colder temperatures. Weather over Eagle Summit is often horrible, and seven mushers and their dog teams had to be evacuated from there in 2006. Mackey would win the Quest again in 2006, 2007, and 2008, making him the only four-time Quest champion and the only person who won four Quests in a row. Prior to Lance Mackey, it was conventional wisdom that dogs simply could not run over 1,000 miles in the Yukon Quest in February and then run another 1,000 miles in the Iditarod a few weeks later. But Mackey realized that something unexpected was happening to his dogs toward the end of the Quest. They were performing better than they had at the start and seemed much stronger, faster, and better motivated. He speculated that this might be because they were operating more efficiently after nearly 1,000 miles of racing. And that could mean that conventional wisdom was just wrong. Maybe a team of dogs fresh off running the Quest would be operating at near peak efficiency at the start of Iditarod and could continue on that pace all through the race. Most people thought that Mackey's strategy was pure folly and that his dogs would be exhausted long before they reached the Yukon River in the Iditarod race. But instead, Mackey's dogs were strong and performing well. And in 2007, Lance Mackey did what many considered impossible. He won the Iditarod just a few weeks after he had won the Yukon Quest using most of the same dogs. And then, the next year, in 2008, he did it again, winning both his fourth straight Yukon Quest and his second straight Iditarod. But going back to 2007, Mackey's Iditarod victory almost seems like it was preordained, like it was decreed by cosmic forces or sent down as an order from the gods. In 1978, Lance's father Dick Mackey was running his sixth Iditarod. He drew bib number 13 in the banquet before the race and went on to win. 5 years later, in 1983, Lance's brother Rick Mackey was running his sixth Iditarod. He too drew bib number 13 before the race, and he too went on to win. 2007 was Lance Mackey's sixth Iditarod, and at the banquet in Anchorage before the race, he too drew bib number 13. 82 teams started the 2007 Iditarod, including Jeff King, Martin Boozer, Doug Swingley, and Robert Sorley. Poor trail conditions led many teams to scratch in the first several days. Boozer took an early lead, but Mackey passed him coming into Nicolai. Boozer took the lead back going into McGrath, but Mackey and Jeff King were close behind. King, Mackey, Zach Steer, Boozer, and Paul Gephardt fought it out going up the Bering Coast, but Mackey had a substantial lead coming into White Mountain. Ramey Brooks, in that race, was accused by several people of beating his dogs when they refused to leave a checkpoint. Brooks denied the allegations, but admitted that he had spanked his dogs. One of the dogs died the day after the incident, which caused the ITC to disqualify Brooks from the 2007 race. Following a formal investigation, the ITC voted to suspend Brooks for the 2008 and 2009 race and then put him on probation through 2012. Although Mackey has said publicly that he never felt entirely accepted by the mushing powers that be and the elites of Iditarod and the ITC, he found himself the defending champion and favorite coming into 2008 after he won his fourth straight Yukon Quest. As the press began to seek out Mackey more and more, he became more outspoken, sometimes taunting and trash-talking his fellow mushers, especially his arch-rival Jeff King. The 2008 race started with 96 teams, including former champs Mackey, King, Boozer, Swenson, Mitch Seavey, and Joe Runyon. King and Mackey battled back and forth all through the race. Mackey tried to unnerve King by sometimes following him so closely that he could hear the music King was listening to on an iPod through battery-powered speakers that King had draped over his chest. The 2008 race was also one that many expected King to win, and one that King might have won if it hadn't been for what just might be the most famous nap in Iditarod history. King pulled into Elam ahead of Mackey, did his dog chores, and prepared to take a quick nap. Mackey made his way into Elam, did his dog chores, and came inside. Based on their run-rest schedules, King expected Mackey to be in Elam for at least 3 hours. And Mackey seemed in no hurry and looked like he was preparing to stay for quite a while. But the entire time, Mackey kept one eye on King, just waiting for King to close his eyes. Mackey had been trying to get the slip on King all up the coast. In Unalakleet, Mackey came in after King. He went down the street to get some coffee, and then, rather than going inside to rest, he headed out on the trail, building a 44-minute lead. But King's dogs were much more powerful, and he soon made up most of that time. By the time they reached Koyuk, King was just 8 minutes behind. In Koyuk, King rested his feet on Mackey's boots that Mackey had taken off, so that Mackey would have to wake him up when he left. But King didn't bother doing that in Elam, and as soon as King fell asleep, Mackey slipped out the door, harnessed his dogs, and set out down the trail. Mackey later admitted that his team was not as good as King's and would not be able to outrun King's team if they both left at the same time, so his only choice if he wanted to win the race was to leave earlier. By the time King woke up from his nap in Elam, Mackey was long gone, and Jeff King was not able to make up the time, winding up under the Burled Arch and Nome in second place, about an hour and 20 minutes behind Lance Mackey. The 2008 Iditarod was also the first year when the Iditarod put GPS tracking devices on a handful of sleds. This was a pilot program to see how real-time GPS tracking information could be used to help fans keep track of the exact location of mushers. The next year, GPS devices were added to all of the competitors' sleds. This transformed how the race was followed by fans from all over the world. Now, instead of refreshing standings pages over and over again, or calling into the phone room at Iditarod headquarters late at night to find out exactly where a particular musher was, fans who paid for GPS subscriptions would be able to know exactly where everyone was at all times on the trail. Over the years, the GPS devices and the information available would become more and more sophisticated, showing run rest statistics, average speed, and much, much more. Eventually, a second device would be added to sleds, which provided an instant SOS button that mushers could push if they were in trouble and needed emergency assistance. This would then result in their disqualification. Nearly as soon as GPS trackers became part of Iditarod, fans began complaining about the service. At times, the trackers would not update for a while, they sometimes would not ping when they were supposed to ping, and this led to a lot of people complaining online on social media. Suddenly, an amazing technology that was vastly superior to the system that came before was under attack and considered horrible because it wasn't perfect, even though 95% of the time, the devices performed very well, even when it was 40 below zero or when mushers were hundreds of miles from the nearest town. Mackie would go on to win Iditarod again in 2009 and 2010, making him the only musher to win four races in a row. Even with all that success, he still felt that he wasn't quite accepted by the Iditarod establishment. He still experienced minor run-ins with the law, at one point being arrested for traveling with a small amount of marijuana, and at another point being involved in a physical confrontation with his then-wife that brought the police out. But despite all of these problems, Mackie's skill as a musher and as someone who instinctively knew exactly what his dogs could do and how to get them to perform at a level that was astonishing made him a formidable foe, especially when you consider that he can look frail and small and that his doctors told him when he was diagnosed initially with cancer that he would be lucky to be able to survive and live a normal life, and that long distance mushing at all, let alone at a level where he could be considered the best in the world, would be impossible. It's no wonder that a popular saying at the time was, "Superman wears Lance Mackie pajamas." The race continued to struggle financially, even as purses and the size of the field varied. The 2008 financial crisis, which hit many parts of the country with devastating effects, did not have as much of an immediate impact on the state of Alaska, which was buoyed by oil revenues from the North Slope. In the middle of the financial crisis, Republican presidential nominee John McCain, recognizing that he was losing and needed a political Hail Mary if he was going to be elected president, named Alaska Governor Sarah Palin as his running mate.
Devoted wife and a mother of five. She's got the grit, integrity, good sense, and fierce devotion to the common good that is exactly what we need in Washington today. She's fought oil companies and party bosses and do-nothing bureaucrats and anyone puts their interests before the interests of the people she swore an oath to serve. She's exactly who I need. She's exactly who this country needs. Governor Sarah Palin of the great state of Alaska.
Palin, a former mayor of Wasilla and self-proclaimed hockey mom, had a reputation as a populist. She famously sold off the official governor's airplane and dismissed the chef at the governor's mansion, saying that she could cook and make peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for her own kids. Recognizing the importance of Iditarod to Alaska and Alaskans, Palin signed a bill making the first Saturday of March, the day of Iditarod's ceremonial start in Anchorage, Susan Butcher Day. Although the Iditarod took a while to feel the effects of the financial crisis, it was not immune from them. The 2008 purse was over $900,000, but by December 2009, it looked like the purse for the 2010 race would be only $525,000. And the Iditarod itself was trimming its already lean race budget by nearly $500,000 to make up for an anticipated shortfall. Jeff King, at that point the oldest musher who had ever won Iditarod at age 50, gave the ITC a check for $50,000 to bolster the purse for the 2010 race. King noted that, although he's not a wealthy man, he had won money from the race over the years. He told the Anchorage Daily News that he hoped his contribution would encourage others to donate, even if it's just a few bucks. Mitch Seavey gave $10,000 for the 2010 Sepala Heritage Grant given by Iditarod after he won $100,000 in the Winner Take All Alaska Sweepstakes. Seavey praised King for his contribution, noting that, quote, "You could have a wood shop accident and still count on the fingers of one hand how many mushers could do what Jeff is doing," unquote. King noted that the amount was the same as King won in his first Iditarod victory in 1993. He jokingly referred to this as a multi-decade interest-free loan that he was paying back to Iditarod. He says it seemed like a huge amount of money when he and his wife started discussing it, but he realized that the race had opened up doors for him and given him so much more. King and many other mushers were quick to say that they don't enter dog sled races for the money, and King himself noted, "We're all going broke doing this." A few days after the announcement of King's donation, the city of Nome announced that it too was donating $50,000 to go to the Iditarod's 2010 purse. Perhaps as part of his ongoing psychological warfare with Lance Mackey, Jeff King announced that the 2010 Iditarod was likely his last race, and it was ironic to be running to Nome just to get his money back. And for a while, it looked like King was going to win and get every bit of that money back. He dominated the middle portion of the race, but Mackey passed him at Caltag, and Hans Gatt would pass him further down the trail. That year, Jeff King came in third and took home $43,200 out of the $50,000 that he'd donated. King also received several other prizes along the route, so with that cash, you could pretty much call it a wash for him financially in Iditarod 2010, unless you count the entry fee and the money to ship drop bags and vet bills and the cost of feeding and caring for dogs year-round and the cost of personal and canine transportation. And when you factor all of that in, you can understand Jeff King's statement before the race that we're all going broke doing this. Mackey himself received a check for $50,400 and his fourth new truck in 4 years. He later said that he considered himself lucky to be one of a handful of people who could make his full living as a dog musher. Mackey, too, openly flirted with the idea of taking 2011 off from Iditarod, perhaps going to race in Norway where race officials there were trying to lure him. But he admitted it would be awfully hard to resist trying for five in a row. For the moment, Mackey was perched on the top of the dog mushing world, and there was every reason to think that his string of amazing successes would continue. As always, it's dangerous when you start having those thoughts. Here's a list of the Iditarod winners in the late 2000s. 2006, Jeff King, with lead dogs Salem and Bronte, in 9 days, 11 hours, 11 minutes, and 36 seconds. 2007, Lance Mackey, with lead dogs Larry and Lippy, in 9 days, 5 hours, 8 minutes, and 41 seconds. 2008, Lance Mackey, with lead dogs Larry and Hobo, in 9 days, 11 hours, 46 minutes, and 48 seconds. 2009, Lance Mackey, with lead dogs Larry and Maple, in 9 days, 21 hours, 38 minutes, and 46 seconds. And 2010, Lance Mackey, with lead dog Maple, in 8 days, 23 hours, 59 minutes, and 9 seconds. Next week, the race speeds up even more, and a new multi-generational dynasty is born. For Iditarod Through the Decades, I'm Alex Stein.
From DogWorks Radio, this is Mushing Radio. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and we invite you to subscribe in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll find a link on the episode notes. You can tap or swipe on the episode cover art, and you'll see some offers from our sponsors. You can support our show by supporting them. If you like what you have heard, we would love it if you could give us a 5-star rating and tell your friends how to subscribe too. Your hosts are Alex Stein and Robert Forto. Our producer is Robert Forto, created for DogWorks Radio. Did you know that Alaska Dog Works trains service dogs for those in need throughout North America? Each and every service dog that is trained through the Lead Dog Service Dog Program and Michelle Forto and her team has an individual training plan. We train for autistic, mobility, psychiatric, and PTSD for our soldiers for service work. If you know of someone that may need a service dog, please take a moment and check out Alaska Dog Works on social media and at alaskadogworks.com.